You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It's Monday morning. My name is Elizabeth Anderson. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. On today's edition of Jaws of Justice Radio, Keith Brown Ill talks with Missouri State Representative Brandon Ellington about the 2014 legislative session. Then in the second half of our show, host Melvin Merritt talks to Jeffrey and Roosevelt, residents of the City Union Mission, about their efforts to survive and transcend homelessness. Get your pens and paper ready for our calendar of events in the middle of the show. And as always, the 420 drug war news after the show. Now here's Keith and his guest, Brandon Ellington.
Justice Radio. My name is Keith Brown Ill, and today I will be interviewing State Representative Brandon Ellington, who is here by way of telephone to update us on the progress at the Missouri State Capitol. Representative Ellington has provided us with a copy of numerous items on the legislative agenda, and he is prepared to give us some details about this. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the show.
Hey, and I'm here. How you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing fine, sir. Welcome to the show. I'd like to start off by reading to our audience a correspondence which we received from your office several days ago, and one which I assume you sent to everyone on your mailing list. It says, "Dear friend, just a quick update on the progress at the Capitol. Several bills I have filed are about to go to committee. I know full well that many voices will speak louder than my voice ever could. You hired me to represent you, and every bill I offer is for you and our community. I consider these bills to be top priority, and I think they could do our community a lot of good. If you believe these bills need to be passed, contact the committee members and demand action. These representatives, my colleagues, have the power to make these bills come to fruition. Email and phone numbers are below." Now, we don't have time on the show to give a complete list of all of the people on these committees that need to be contacted, but at the end of the show, I will ask you for your contact information, and then our audience will be able to contact you and obtain whatever other information they need. Now, the first bill is House Bill number 1393. It's for the committee, Children, Families, and Persons with Disabilities. It has 13 members. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay, 1393. That's the I had a committee hearing on that one last week. I'm looking it up just to make sure I'm correct on the right one. That's the one dealing with the father registry, the 15 through 60 days?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I had a committee hearing on that one last week. The committee hearing went fairly well. I had one person that was an opponent who was a professor in law school, and her only reason for opposing it was that she thought it created a barrier for parents adopting kids. But what the bill does is it extends the father registry from 15 days to 60 days, allowing the father to actually sign up on the registry and take responsibility for his child. As it stands right now, if the father doesn't sign up within 15 days, then he loses all parental rights for life. So the child could be adopted out. Anything can happen to the child, and he would have no legal repercussions. So the only thing I'm trying to do is actually extend the time frame from 15 days to 60.
The next bill is number 1394, the Committee Judiciary, which has 11 members. It authorizes a one-time expungement of certain criminal records, including a conviction for any nonviolent crime, misdemeanor, or nonviolent drug violation. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, when people commit a crime, that doesn't mean they should be locked away for the rest of their lives. That doesn't mean they should be isolated and denied access to jobs, employment, a chance to truly reassimilate, a chance to truly get back into society. And again, what it does is suspension for nonviolent drug offenses. So that means the lesser of the crimes, people will actually be able to go apply for suspension within 3 years. And there's several different institutes that has done studies on it, like the National Institute of Justice has done a study on it as far as what the suspension of criminal records could do. And I believe it's a good piece of legislation. I believe if somebody goes to the penitentiary and they serve their time, which is mandated by the courts, they should be allowed a chance, a second chance, a true second chance.
Okay. And what is the status of that bill right now?
That bill has not received a hearing yet. So I definitely would like to ask people out there if they believe that people should be allowed to get their records as long as they had nonviolent misdemeanors, et cetera, then please contact the members of that committee and let them know what type of difference you believe it would make in the communities and society. Because some people on the committee, they never interact with low-income areas. And crime and poverty has an equator factor there. When people are in poverty conditions, when people are in economically stressed situations, certain things happen. And I believe that if somebody was born in those type of situations or forced to live in those type of situations, even though they committed a crime, they should be allowed to do what the justice system says. You serve your time, and then you're justified to live a life again.
I'm assuming that somewhere down the line there will be more legislation along these lines, because we have, I think, the majority of the people who are incarcerated in Missouri have violent crimes, at least half that many. And if we don't have legislation that also addresses this issue for them, that's going to leave a lot of people out. And this is where a lot of people really have trouble trying to consider people for jobs when they have violent crimes. A lot of people have ended up in these situations because they temporarily lost their sanity for a minute or something, and you know, after that they were just like everybody else. They came back to their true self. Somebody pushed the wrong button on them. They went through several programs to ensure that doesn't happen again, and they also deserve a second chance. But they also need to have an income to be able to be successful out on the street and reintegrate themselves into the community. So I would hope that someone would be considering also introducing some type of legislation for those people as well.
No, I agree with you 100%, and I plan on it. Most of my criminal justice bills I actually amended this year for nonviolent offenders. So last year I was overtly trying to affect the offender population. The problem that I had was perception. So when people would hear violent criminals, immediately they'd be like, well, we don't want to do that. Like, I have a bill that removes the felony question off the application process, so with certain exceptions. And the reason I amended those was, one, get the conversation started. Two, get something that was good that we can pass and that will start to help out. And then you can continue to work on the conversation of why this is needed, the type of benefits that it has with people's lives and the type of public safety benefits it has overtly for society. And that's a hard process, because you not only do you have to articulate what's going on, you have to help people to perceive society differently. And the reason I say it like that, we learn from observation and participation. So if I participated in an impoverished community, my perception of that community and what happens in that community will be different than if I was if I came from a more affluent community and I didn't have to deal with the elements that poverty produces. And that's why it's for nonviolent offenders. But I agree with you 100%. And another reason that I was willing to amend it, 80% of the population in the state of Missouri is nonviolent drug offenders.
Mm. So you're saying, in other words, that you're using the nonviolent offenders as a forerunner to further possible legislation for violent offenders, and that once people see that they can hire these nonviolent offenders, and in the majority of cases without some type of incident, that they'll be less reluctant to or hire people who have been convicted of violent crimes.
Yes. Especially when you start taking in account the type of crime, what happened around the commission of the crime, why the crime was instituted. These are all conversations that I believe that as a society we have to start having. It's a difference. It's a very, very, very realistic difference between murdering somebody for the sake of murdering somebody and accidentally shooting somebody.
Yes,
it's a very distinct difference between selling drugs because you believe there's no other way for you to get any type of resources, any type of money, as opposed to robbing people and killing them for what's in their pocket.
Yes, sir.
Two different mentalities go into that crime. And when we look at inner city or low-poverty areas, you see more drug offenses And you have to ask yourself, why are these drug offenses happening? Why are people so willing to sell drugs in these communities? And then when you look at the larger context, you'll see that it's a lack of jobs, a lack of viable institutions, a lack of a whole bunch of things that a normal community needs to function normally. Some of these is culturally missing because we have to fight for it. Some of these is institutionally missing, and there's no excuse for that because the resources are supposed to be cut and spread equally. So it's a whole bunch of reasonings behind some of these criminal justice bills that I have. But the underlining goal is public safety. If you take somebody that has a job, that person is less likely to offend because now they have a stake in the game and they have something to lose, as opposed to somebody that can't get a job and that's feeling isolated and somewhat depressed. They're going to act out. That's not good for public safety.
Yes, sir. Okay, let's move on to House Bill 1395, the Special Standing Committee on Corrections. Now, this committee also has 11 members. And the bill that is currently before it repeals the provision allowing the Board of Probation and Parole to charge an offender an intervention.
Yeah, this bill, 1395, and I'm looking for the number right now, 1395, and I have another bill, and I know we're going to get to it. The other bill, it mandates that somebody that's locked up in a correctional institution get certified and bonded. These, to me, these are companion bills.
Mm-hmm.
The other bill I'm talking about is House Bill 1402. Okay. So 1395 and 1402 are corresponding bills to me. If you charge an offender $35 to $50 intervention fees when they're out, but that same individual has extra barriers to getting a job, has extra barriers to institutional knowledge, meaning they've been locked up for 5 to 10 years and they haven't received any type of job skills training. They haven't received any type of educational services. So you release this individual after serving 5, 10, 15, 20 years, what have you, back into society. Immediately you start charging them $35 to $50, and you send them to an economically stressed area. Because when we look at the data, we see that the average release from corrections, when they're maxed out, they're going to St. Louis or they're coming to Kansas City.
Right.
Even when they have time, they're coming to Kansas City or St. Louis, because this is where the halfway houses are. You don't see none out in the rural area. They have to be concentrated in the area that has infrastructure.
Right.
So they come to Kansas City or St. Louis. They have no money, no job training. You start charging them money and you tell them they're going to get locked up. What do you think they're going to do? They're going to end up offending again. Now, if we had a situation in which that individual, and this goes to House Bill 1402, where that individual, when they was locked up, they was offered real on the job training and certification, meaning that they started working in there and it was an institution that qualified for certification or bonding, they would be certified or bonded in the type of job that they're doing. So when that same individual gets out, then they can get a job. Then it's justifiable to charge them $35 to $50. It's unjustifiable to charge somebody when you know they have no way of getting resources except to do illegal business.
Is this a one-time fee, or is it a fee that it lasts during the time that they're on parole or probation or whatever?
Which one, the probation or parole fee?
The intervention fee.
Typically, it lasts the duration of their parole period. Now, it is a lot of vital services that probation and parole provides. But my thing is we have to start targeting the type of programs and resources that we have out there. You don't send a crackhead to 12-step programs when you take somebody that's on cocaine and you give them methadone and you give them a program. You do the exact same for the exact same substance. So when you look at crack and you look at cocaine, the psychological and physiological effect on the body is the same. Then the individual that's dealing with these substances, their treatment and their time frame should be the same, because you can't have crack without cocaine. It's impossible. But you can't have cocaine without crack. But the time frames don't match up. Neither does the sentencing aspect match up when we talk about the two substances, even though they have the exact same psychological and physiological effect on the body. Mm-hmm. And again, this is things that I believe some of these bills will bring about, because in order to talk about the bills, we have to talk about the effects and the reasoning for having these bills. And once we get into an honest conversation, I believe we will see these laws change.
I agree. I have another question for you. Why does the Missouri Border Probations and Parole need money from offenders when they are already receiving funding from the state?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a question that I often ask in appropriations, because I sit on that appropriations committee. Some of the things in correction, not necessarily probation, I'm looking at, because again, a lot of the probation services is social service, sort of. I believe they need to be curtailed, and I believe they need to be more targeted. But when you look at the larger scheme of things, all the money that corrections, probation and parole will be included, all the money that corrections generate, the type of resources that they give the inmates when they're in there, is kind of crazy when you look at all the contracts, all the money that's getting allocated, all the money that's getting taken from offenders, offenders' families, from the community, from the taxpayers. It's a lot of money that's going into corrections. And I'm actually going through the appropriation process. I don't have a good answer for you as to why they need all that money, because I'm trying to unravel some of that myself.
Well,
I know some of the contracts
knows.
And corrections need to be dealt with immediately.
Okay, let's go with House Bill 1441. It's in front of the Judiciary Committee. It removes the statute of limitations for certain actions to recover damages regarding child abuse and sexual offenses committed against a child, and allows prosecutions for child abuse and to be commenced at any time.
Yeah, I'm actually looking to try to move this bill multiple ways. I haven't had a hearing on this bill yet this year. I filed this same bill last year. Last year I had overwhelming support from the committee. We passed it out of committee, but nobody voting against it. I believe it was like 12 or 14 yes. I'm expecting the same type of reception this year. One of the issues that we have is the amount of slots that somebody is given for a bill. So this bill is something that I'm expecting to become law. I'm just trying to figure out the best way to get it to the governor's desk. But I have a lot of support with that bill. It's a lot of support in the House with that bill, and I believe that we can get that law real soon.
What was the hang up when it didn't pass last time?
Just a number of slots. See, the way the House works is you have a certain amount of slots per committee. Right now it's 108 Republicans and 53 Democrats. So that means Democrats, we really don't have any slots. So anything that's going to come out depends on the speaker if it's going to get a slot. I can pass the bill, but there's different techniques that we can use to get it as law too, such as amendments, putting it on bills, et cetera. So it's different ways to get this language attached in the statute. And I'm going to use every angle that I can to get this in the statute, because this doesn't guarantee conviction. What it allows is it allows a child that has been molested or somebody that has been molested, whether they're adult or a child, to go back after the statute of limitation is up and still prosecute that individual. So it's like murder will be no statute of limitation. And when we talk about sexual abuse, most people harbor that pain for years before they talk about it. And it's even longer before they're willing to face their accuser. So we have predators walking around all day because the statute of limitation ran out. This would also affect the Priest case. The Priest case has statute of limitations, so there's no way that they can go back and get the Priest for, you know, molesting those little altar boys. But now there would be no statute of limitation.
Now, is there a limitation on how many bills a particular representative can introduce, or within a certain time frame, like in a certain limitation on how many that can be introduced in a session?
No, there's no limitation on how many bills you can introduce, but a quick synopsis of politics or state politics, and this would be the same congressionally. You got the Speaker of the House. The Speaker of the House dictates what comes up, what doesn't come up, what goes to committee, what doesn't go to committee. Then you have the chairman of committees. The chairman of the committees can hear your bill or they cannot hear your bill. Just because your bill goes to that committee doesn't mean you get a hearing. It's at the chairman's will if you get a hearing. So if you get a hearing, you get the speaker to send your bill to committee, you get a hearing in that committee, and you pass it out to committee, then it goes to the floor. Well, the floor leader dictates if your bill gets heard on the floor or not. So if you get the floor leader to give you a hearing on the floor, then you debate your bill on the floor. If you can pass it out the floor, then it goes over to the Senate. And then the whole process of debate and going to committee starts over again. So it's a long process as far as getting something passed. That's why you hear people talk about the conversation, because the more you get people used to our deal, the easier it is, because they start to understand it. That's one of the problems we have in Missouri, is our time frame being at the state, in my opinion, is too short, because we don't get enough good stuff done while we're combating all the bad stuff.
So in other words, we're supposed to live in a democratic society, but when we get into the politics of the democracy, we see that we have one individual who makes a determination on what can be presented as a law, and he can hold up legislation, he can hold up issues, because he makes the decision. That's left solely up to him.
Yes, and that's why voting is so important. In Missouri, most of our statewide is Democrat. In the House, is more Republicans. But when we look at the number, we don't come out in off elections. I mean, if it's not a presidential election, we don't pay attention to state politics. So when our numbers is low, we wonder why we can't get anything good passed that we believe in. Well, it's because we're allowing the process to be ran by people that don't believe the same things that we believe. And that's a problem. That's why it's important that we participate, because then the system changes. Then the system actually works to the betterment of the people, as opposed to an opposition of the will of the people.
So this makeup that you have of the House and the Senate is not necessarily reflective of the fact that these people that's in power are in the majority.
Yes. And that's the stalemate of the laws that we have. Like when you talk about Kansas City and St. Louis, certain things would be overtly beneficial, like early childhood education. That'd be beneficial, right? But when we look at party lines, we see the Democrats support early childhood education. Republicans oppose early childhood education. Medicaid expansion. This is something that we know would benefit everybody in the state of Missouri, whether if you live in a so-called urban area or if you live in a rural area, because rural areas lack certain amenities. Inner city areas lack amenities, in particular when we're talking about access to health care. But what do we have? We have party line politics. Okay, so now nothing's getting done on that, even though it benefits everybody's constituents. But it's political. So since it's political, nothing's getting done. And that's by way of who we've allowed to take over the political process. We have to be more involved.
Okay, could you give me, we're almost out of time. We have a few minutes. Could you give me a few details on House Bill 1407? This is in front of the Crime Prevention and Public Safety Committee. It requires any criminal justice entity conducting eyewitness identification to adopt specified procedures for conducting photos and live lineups and meet specific requirements.
Yeah, this is a very detailed bill. If you was to actually read the whole entire text of the bill, you will see that everything is pretty much drafted, drawn out, and what I'm trying to do here is standardize the eyewitness process. You have a lot of people, and I don't have the data in front of me because I'm actually going back to jail city, but you have a lot of people that get locked up off of false eyewitness identification. A lot of empirical data that shows that sometimes that's not the best form of identification.
Right.
So what I want to do is standardize the process. That way, if somebody does hit on it, then it's a positive hit. If they don't hit on it, then it probably was a questionable identification. And it standardizes the way the police can actually do the lineup, type of people that they can have in the lineup, which will give an accurate hit as opposed to just having similar quality.
Okay, we have one more bill. 1505, the committee judiciary, requires the Board of Probation and Parole to periodically review the case history of certain convicted offenders serving sentences of more than 15 years or life without parole.
Yeah, right now there's no process in which somebody can come before the appeals process. When it says certain individuals, it's requirements in the bill that stipulates what type of offender would qualify. It would have to be somebody that committed a crime where they got sentenced to life, but it was their first offense. They haven't been committing crimes. They don't have a long rap sheet of committing crimes. And when they've been locked up, they haven't been, you know, engaged in fights or causing havoc or mayhem or anything like that. It's to actually get people that got locked up at an early age or some that got locked up in midlife that committed a crime, but they have no criminal history of committing crimes of that nature. And it gives them a chance to come before the parole board as long as they've been in there and they haven't been causing problems.
Sir.
And it's other stipulations in there, too.
It is always a pleasure to have you on our show, and we certainly appreciate the work that you're trying to do to move these legislations forward. We hope you have the best of success, and we once again thank you for being on our show.
No, thank you.
And now the calendar. Mothers of Incarcerated Sons and Daughters presents the first of its Let the Truth Be Known lecture series with Dr. Christy Griffin, founder and president of the Ethics Project in St. Louis, Missouri. Dr. Griffin is author of Incarceration in Black and White, The Subjugation of Black America. Dr. Griffin will speak at the UMKC Student Center, 5000 Homes, KCMO, on Thursday, February 20th from 6 to 8 p.m. This event is open to the public. For directions and parking information, call 816-235-5071. On Friday, February 21st at 9:15 a.m., Dr. Griffin will be joined by Missouri State Representative Brandon Ellington and Kansas City, Missouri Councilman Michael Brooks at Zion Grove Missionary Baptist Church, 2801 Swope Parkway, Kansas City, Missouri, for what is billed as an awakening session. For information on these two events, contact Beverly Livingston at 816-337-5876. Or check the MISD website, misd-kc.com. And stay tuned in the future for a Jaws of Justice radio interview with Dr. Griffin. TEDxKC, the KC Public Library, Union Station, and Campfire are joining forces as presenting community partners to support the development of TEDx youth in KC. This program will feature Michael Lemon and Candace Walker from Campfire National Headquarters on Thursday, February 27th from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at Union Station in the Arthur Stillwell Room for an engaging training and rich discussion around positive youth development. For more information, browse their website at tedxyouth@stateline.road. The Prosperity Center for Financial Opportunity is offering tax preparation services at the Rockhurst Community Center, 5401 Troost, Kansas City, Missouri. They will be open on Saturday, February 22nd, March 15th, 30th, and April 12th from 8 a.m. to noon. For more information on tax preparation and their employment, education, and financial coaching seminars, call them at 816-501-4243 or email to info@prosperitycenterkc.org. My name is Amy Bell, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1 on your dial. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt, and stay tuned. We have a very interesting broadcast, and in the studio with me is Mr. Jeffrey Cornelius and Mr. Theodore Brock. They will be sharing how they became homeless and how they are working their way out of it. Welcome, fellas, to Jaws of Justice this morning.
Yeah, how you doing? How's everybody?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, let's start off. We could start off with Jeffrey. Tell us a little bit of what were you doing before you became homeless?
Before I became homeless, I was married and to my wife in St. Louis, my ex-wife, and just coming out of incarceration, I had some problems not knowing how to raise a family, you know, and coming out of a broken home without a father, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It placed a lot of responsibility up on me as a man. And which I wasn't prepared for. And it seemed like our communication, we had communication problems.
Mm-hmm.
And despite the fact that, you know, that I moved to St. Louis, my old habits.
And what were those habits?
Alcohol, drugs, mm-hmm. selfishness, self-centeredness.
You mentioned that you didn't know how to handle certain situations. Was it because that as a young man or as a boy, you wasn't taught by a father figure? And what was that relationship with your father like growing up?
Well, my relationship with my father was scarce. He was only there, you know, periodically, and we didn't communicate as father and son. It was, you know, how you doing?
Just a
passing by thing, you know. And I can see where it came relevant in my later life that, you know, how I couldn't cope with being a leader or the head of the family.
Because you wasn't actually taught. You was basically taught by, say, the streets and in your environment and the people that you were associating yourself with.
Correct.
Yeah. So, Theodore, could you kind of tell us, this is Theodore Brock, and could you kind of tell us on the same line of the question that I asked Mr. Jeffrey, what were you doing before you became homeless?
That's a good question. When I was, you asked him, I was thinking about that. My situation was just a little bit more different. I kind of grew up in a good environment. For me, I made bad choices. I have to look at my circumstance. You know, and then growing up in an environment where drugs and alcohol was prevalent, and it was a thing to do when I was coming up. And like I said, for me, I just made bad choices. It started off, you know, it was just something to do on the weekend, and it developed to a bad situation. Then I tried to mix that with relationships and family, and
that carried over,
and then you know, didn't have really. I mean, my mother did well with me because I still think about things she had told me in the past, but when you being blindsided with drugs and alcohol, it kind of blinds you
from the responsibility,
reality, those things. Like I said, it started off as you know, just something to do with kids, and then like I said, then I grew up with the drug addiction and alcohol addiction in my life, and
so this took place earlier in your
teenage years, right? Just like I said, in my neighborhood where I grew up in, you know, drugs with alcohol was the thing that was open.
Yeah. What was your relationship with your father?
My father, he was not there, but I had a lot of uncles and cousins that I grew up with that were real instrumental in my life. But like I said, I didn't want to listen to those things.
Yeah.
I had a good back, you know, just good upbringing. Just, you know, like I said, I chose to go a different route.
Your way, basically.
My way, right. Mm-hmm.
So eventually, right along with Mr. Jeffrey, that eventually with the drugs and the different associations that you surrounded yourself with in terms of people that was doing somewhat of the same things. And so you followed that path. And what was your school like when you were younger, Brother Jeffrey?
I liked school. I was on the track team, football team. That's, you know, high school, junior high, and in my younger years, you know, I used to like to draw, so I took up art classes, and you know, I'm pretty good at drawing. You know, I had in mind, you know, once after finishing high school that, you know, I'd go into architecture, but okay. You know, having been blindsided, as Brother Theodore said, by the fact of, you know, alcohol and drugs being introduced into my life, college passed, and I took another route, which landed me up at doing time.
Mm-hmm. So it kind of left you out of touch with not only reality, but it left you out of touch with how to handle life,
mm-hmm.
and some of the pitfalls of life.
Right.
And not knowing, because what are your understanding about the homeless culture that you can get caught up in? And because I see some of the guys and sometimes the ladies carrying these little plastic bags, and their entire livelihood sometimes is carried in that bag, and it becomes a culture.
Yeah.
So you happen to fall into that, like waiting for sandwiches, and
right.
that was handed out.
Exactly.
And where's the place that you reside at now?
For me, it's the down City Union Mission, and that for me is not a place where I enjoy, but it's a place where I need to be right now, because it caught me from falling, how can I say this? Falling, you know, I mean, I'm down, but I'm not out because
right.
of the City Mission, because it gave me a little stable stability and a stable ground to walk on. And I'm thankful for that, because I'm on my way out of there. I'm halfway out of there now, for City Mission, it kind of, you know, like I said, kind of gave me a ground to walk on,
mm-hmm.
to get my life back in order, and also see, because they got a lot of programs in there, to see where I have made my mistakes and to really look at them and open up. And you know, I talked to good men of God, and you know, they have shown me good things. How to look at, how to handle situations, because you know, drugs and alcohol kind of distracts you from reality.
Right.
You know, right now I'm at the Apostle Doctrine Church, and it's a good place for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's an added situation for me. Mm-hmm. We have a men's group down there. It's excellent. But you know, just learning characters of a man is what sometimes we miss in our growing.
Yeah.
The purpose of a man we miss in our growing, because of choices that we make.
Right. And we talk about sometimes that things that we need to start thinking about in terms of the information that we have been using when you're out in the streets.
Right.
And you're associating with other homeless people or people that are in that drug culture.
Right.
And so they have been guided by the wrong information. I call it false data.
Right.
False information.
Mm-hmm.
And they take that false information and carry it and relate it to what's going on in your life right now.
Right.
And what you guys are doing now in this men group is to start looking at something to cause you to think a little different, in another direction.
That's right.
Opposed to thinking in that old way.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your long-term goals are being in the City Union Mission, Brother Jeffrey?
My long-term goals are to get out of the City Union Mission, for one, because it's not a place to be content,
mm-hmm.
with living, you know, on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
Basically, it's a hand up instead of a hand out.
Right.
And my goals are to get out, you know, and live a productive life, you know. I can see myself, you know, maybe, you know, getting married once again, and you know, going into a ministry that would help others, you know.
Right.
Because, you know, everybody needs a hand up, you know.
Yeah.
And being in a situation like that, you can see on a daily basis, you know, what people are going through,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how it relates to you. And you can be, you know, a shoulder to lean on,
right.
you know, and give a little guidance, you know, on the way out.
So what are your thoughts about you know, getting caught up in that culture behind the fact that somebody can kind of assist you, and then all of a sudden you don't have to take any real responsibilities about your own life, and so you get used to that, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's easy to it's easy for that to happen if you really don't, like you said, if you don't have no goals, and you're really not trying to get no direction. And for me, it's a little bit different because I'm still married, and me and my wife are working back. You know, our situation. I mean, I have learned where I have made my mistakes at, and but the thing, I mean, it can be for some people, it can be a situation where you can abuse. Because there's a lot of people out there that's willing to help you,
mm-hmm.
but you gotta take that as a means of elevating yourself, not to stay there and get comfortable. And I've seen that in some people, they decide to get, you know, they
just don't want to do anything.
Just don't want to do it. They accept that. You know.
Remember, listeners, that you're in tune to KKFI 90.1, and in the studio with me this morning is Mr. Theodore Brock and Mr. Jeffrey Cornelius, and we're talking about the experience of being homeless and what they can do in terms of working their way out of that homeless situation. And they have already touched base of how they actually got there is through the uses of drugs and alcohol and associations of the people that are in that culture, which is the drug culture. And so and as we have talked about in the earlier part, is that are you working right now? You know, are you trying to get yourself out of that situation?
Yes, I'm really excited. I have a job. I mean, I always had a job, you know, but this is a full-time job now that I have. But I'm excited about that. It's going a different direction. And like I said, today I have a different outlook on life. You know, I have a different purpose. Yes, I have a job, though, and I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Mr. Jeffrey?
Right now, I'm going to do some training, you know, and some self-evaluation, you know. I'm searching right now for, you know, for what's out there for me,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, you know, like I say, I like to help people, mm-hmm. you know, and.
But we know that we can't help anyone until we get ourselves together, right?
True.
And I noticed that Theodore mentioned about a men group, mm-hmm. that he is involved with. You're in that group as well, right?
Right.
And so is there anything that you're learning from that in terms of your thinking?
Well, yes, yes. We you know, we go through some core issues, you know, in life, you know, like how to be a responsible husband or a father. We look at the reasons why, you know, that men, you know, are delinquent in their responsibilities,
mm-hmm.
you know, in life.
Mm-hmm.
And before, you know, we were introduced to the men's group that we're attending now, we had started a group in the mission,
mm-hmm.
you know, of men that were serious enough to, you know, be involved in it and to look at core issues, you know, in their lives that would help bring them, you know, out of their homelessness,
mm-hmm.
and bring some stability into their lives.
That's good. Because any time that when you want to reach, you know, try to make a difference in your own life, and that's those that are getting involved in programs and getting involved with men groups, mm-hmm. and things like that, that's a person that shows that they're trying to work their way out of that homeless situation. And but we know that City Union Mission is doing a fantastic job in terms of catching those, as what Theodore had mentioned,
mm-hmm.
that he's not out, but he was just falling, and he needed to be caught. And City Union Mission happened to catch him. Mm-hmm. And as he says, he's down, but he's not out.
That's right.
And so that's, you know, that's a good thing when you have something in the community and somewhere you can go to get caught,
right,
and
right.
to the point where you get back up on your feet and start in a different path,
mm-hmm.
and along with a different thought pattern.
That's
and
right.
so and what else, some of the other things, and I know that, what about automobiles? Are you trying to get an automobile or?
Well, yeah, I have a vehicle. I have a vehicle right now that I'm thankful for. Like I said, you know, my situation is just a little bit different, but I am in a homeless state of situation. But I don't know. You don't have to. I realize too, because just by talking to a few guys down there, you really have to be on drugs, what I call it, be homeless. It can be just your mental state.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, just a lot of pressure of life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Things around you can get you caught up in that situation. Because, I mean, you know, drugs, alcohol is one part of it. But there's a lot of other components to this situation. You know, it's just, like I say, it could be just mental stress or anxiety, you know. Because
mm-hmm.
that played a role with me, too, at one point in my life when things I have got overwhelmed with situations, but
mm-hmm.
you know.
Now, I know that you guys talk about, because you know, talk about especially with the drinking and the drugs, and you guys have mm-hmm. a certain amount of freedom
mm-hmm.
to go in and out. Are you still thinking about, or are you drinking, you know, beer and stuff like that? Is that happening in your life at this point in time?
No,
not for me.
No.
I just, like I said, I just keep God first,
mm-hmm.
you know, for me. But other than that, I'm taking my life a little bit more serious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think a lot of us know what we need to do, but sometimes we just get caught up in.
Just want to do what you want to
do.
Just
do what you want to do, exactly.
Uh-huh.
You know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes we try to blame situation and people around us, but sometimes you got to take ownership on some of the situations that go on in your life.
Sometimes I mention it to guys that I would tell them that winners do what they have to do, losers do what they want to do.
Right.
So when
right.
you get up in the morning,
that's
you
right.
just do whatever you want to do, then
right.
you know, you're walking down a path, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Of defeat. So,
right. mm-hmm.
But when you get up and do the things that you have to do,
that's
just,
right.
Right. To make a difference in your own life,
that's right.
and those that you care for,
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
your children, your
right.
family,
yes.
and Mr. Jeffrey,
mm-hmm.
Are you connected at this point in time with your family? Or is that you still working on stuff like that?
Well, I am connected, you know, with my brothers. My sisters I rarely see. It's not because, you know, anything that I've done, you know. It's just that I haven't had the opportunity. But, you know, we have, as brothers and sisters, we have, you know, a real close relationship, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I commend, you know, the state that you know, my family's is in, you know, because they haven't gone through the things that I've gone through, you know, and that inspires me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, you know, like Theodore said, I can't blame anybody other than myself for my present situation.
Mm-hmm.
And
you take ownership.
You have to take ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Ownership and accountability, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very important now because, you know, when you turn over a new life, you got to leave that old life behind,
that old thinking.
And old stinking thinking behind, and just look toward the future.
Right. And so, and that's a good thing, because if you start off blaming people,
mm-hmm.
then you'll never take ownership mm-hmm. of your own faults, and
you miss it.
Yeah, and you miss mm-hmm. what you need to do, because we constantly believe in that somebody else's fault,
mm-hmm.
because you know, if you're drinking and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
and that gives you a much more better for lack of a better word, motivation.
That's right.
To do the right, to do the right things, because I think that that's the main thing, is getting up in the morning and thinking about doing the right things.
That's right.
That's
right.
That's gonna assist you, because if you start building on your integrity and doing the right things, everything else happens to fall in place, and you wouldn't have anything else to do with that.
True.
And so that's the good part about doing things. And like, for instance, coming on the radio broadcast on Jaws of Justice and talking about your plight and sharing that, you know, and that takes a lot, you know, to share that you're still at City Union Mission. So I commend you guys to stand on the radio and listen to so many people listening to you right now this morning. And so, but, you know, that's, it's so prevalent in Kansas City, you know, the I mean, not only the drug culture, but the homeless. And it's, a lot of it is due to drug activities. And so, but I really thank you guys for coming out, being on the broadcast here on Jaws of Justice. And I hope the best for you, and we're out of time, so, and I'm hoping that those that are listening, that you've gotten something out of this broadcast, and I see you next time on here on Jaws of Justice, KKFI 90.1 on your dial.
Ready? One, two, three. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow.
We hope you enjoyed today's show, and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events or a link to our show episode and podcast on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com, and you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website at www.kkfi.org or at 90.1 FM. My name is Lee Moore, and we thank our engineer, Mike Murphy, host of the Wednesday Morning Buzz. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup, with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Beautician's Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, the Arts Magazine with Michael Ho. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta Musical.
Gonna make myself a better man. It's the 420 Drug War News. I would hope by this time that most of you out there have seen those stories on CNN, MSNBC, Fox, and elsewhere about the young kids that need medical marijuana in order to survive, or at least to thrive. Here's a discussion I had with the mother of one such child.
Yes, my name's Penny Howard, and I'm mom to Harper Howard, age 3.5, who has a CDKL5 disorder. That's cyclin-dependent kinase-like 5. It's very rare. There's about 500-600 people worldwide that have that disorder. And the biggest symptom that we battle for her on a daily basis is seizures that are not controlled by any current anti-epileptic drug on the market today.
Well, you know, Penny, the thing is, I keep seeing these stories in the major broadcasters talking about the kids in Colorado getting mm-hmm. access to this more refined drug, I guess, if you will, called Charlotte's Web. But yes. Where do you live?
I live in Texas.
You live in Texas. So you don't have access to Charlotte's Web, so you're taking the best, next best medicine you can find, right?
Yes, sir. And I know people are moving to Colorado in order to gain access to Charlotte's Web. There was a couple of reasons that we chose not to do that and that it wasn't a viable option for us. One is that it uproots our family away from our support system, because even if Harper were to take Charlotte's Web and it were to reduce her seizures or even stop them, we still have a child that requires intense medical needs, and we need our family around to help us, and so we can't really uproot ourselves away from them. The other is that it kind of traps us in the state of Colorado. We would be unable to travel to anywhere with her, and we have some doctors that are out of state, out of the state of Texas, and we don't want Harper to be trapped within a state. So staying in Texas near our support system and introducing her to industrial hemp oil allowed us to get help in seizure reduction and better quality of life without confining her to a certain area.
Given your situation, you are just doing the best that you can. Now, you mentioned the use of the industrial hemp oil, and as I understand it, Charlotte's Web is more akin to hemp than perhaps the more powerful or THC-laden marijuana, if you want to call it
right.
that. Mm-hmm. But you're able to get this from Whole Foods or on the web, correct?
You cannot get it in a store, but you can purchase it online. We get ours directly from the company itself, but you can purchase it on various websites online as well, such as Amazon and things like that.
Thank you, Penny, for your courage. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.